We're exploring how Barron County in northwestern Wisconsin has invested in restorative justice programs for more than two decades. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Restorative justice, it focuses on the harm experienced by victims and what needs to happen to make things better. And the methods have been adopted by court systems, been adopted by schools. It's intended to help victims heal and prevent the accused from reoffending as they accept responsibility for their actions. Have you done work in restorative justice? What are your takeaways? What have you seen? Can victims and perpetrators speaking with each other help victims move on? 800-642-1234 to join in. Mary Heft is Professor Emeritus of Communication Arts and French at UW-Eau Claire, Barron County. She's served as a restorative conference facilitator for Barron County Restorative Justice Program since their inception in 1999. Mary, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having us.
And we also have your colleague, Monica Audette, who is Barron County Restorative Justice Program's operations leader, and she's facilitated more than 600 restorative conference meetings. Monica, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here this morning.
Monica, let's start with you. What is your working definition of restorative justice? How do you describe it to others?
It's kind of a long thing to describe, but restorative justice is a victim-focused theory that really emphasizes repairing harm caused by the crime or the conflict. And it's really out there to respect the dignity and the humanity of people. Most people are familiar with our punitive system, which is based on rules that are broken and often has a prescribed consequence with little to maybe no input from victims. And restorative justice is different that way. It seeks to give a voice to a victim in the community. I think there's a myth out there that restorative justice is a process. It's actually a theory. Most people think, you know, our process, which is victim-offender dialogue, is what it is. But it's actually a theory that has a wide application in how we help victims feel whole, how we help them heal, move mm-hmm. forward, and again, how we help offenders rehabilitate and rejoin our community.
Mary, you've done so much facilitating here. And so when you explain restorative justice, what aspects do you really stress in what it is?
That's changed, Kate. Since when I started, to be honest, my focus was on juvenile offenders. I wanted them to have a second chance. But as soon as I started doing the conferences, I saw the fear that victims were dealing with, the fear that they didn't know who that offender was and what harm was that offender going to cause to them, and the healing that took place after a restorative conference. So now I realize that my focus is on victims and the incredible healing power of restorative conferencing.
What healing powers have you seen? I mean, you're right there. What have you witnessed?
Yeah, well, the one case that I think about, he comes to mind because he was so angry. It was a dad driving his family in a vehicle, and another car was coming from the other direction, and someone in the car tossed out a full can of pop that shattered his window of the car, and he turned around and he went after that car. He was furious. He was furious with the young person in that vehicle who did it. And when we came together in a victim offender conference, he only wanted his money. He was furious with the boy. He wanted his money back. And then he met the boy who did it, the boy who explained to him that he had no idea what he was doing when he tossed that out of the car, his regret. He talked about his life, his tough life, and he said, the boy said, "I want to pay you back for what I've done, but I don't have a job. I don't have a car. I don't know how to pay you back. Will you give me time?" Anyway, the man said, "I need to stop this conference." He walked out with me, and he said, "Would it be okay if I offered that young man a job at my company?"
Wow.
I know. So he went from being so furious with the offender to understanding the troubled life of this young man. You know, it's powerful. I have hundreds of cases like that.
Yeah. Monica, what have you seen in terms of restorative justice and meaning to your community of Barron County? How has it been received?
Well, I have had the fortune of being in restorative justice for 13, 14 years now, and I've seen it change. When I first started, I would call people up and ask them, you know, would you, you know, be interested in going through a process with us? And they'd be like, what is restorative justice? And I've never heard of it, and I don't think so. And I think it's really become operationalized in our county. I rarely have anyone ask me what we do and, you know, what it is anymore, because we seem to understand it in Barron County. It's an expected process, an idea that we do want to focus on the people that have been harmed.
We're talking with Monica Audette, who is operations leader for the Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. Mary Heft here as well served as a restorative conference facilitator for the program since the program's inception in 1999. We're looking at the impact of this work on Barron County. With your questions about restorative justice and where you want to see it work or where you are seeing it work, 800-642-1234. Tyler is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Tyler.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
As a community conference facilitator in Milwaukee County for a restorative justice program, I've been in numerous conferences, and one of the real impacts that I've seen is just the impact on the victim. Often victims are reluctant to participate in our program, and they have kind of lived in fear, having never met their offenders. One of the big things I've seen is after the conference, the victim really is returned to whole. It's changed their feelings. It's changed their lives from living in fear of offenders that could potentially reoffend to meeting these people. You know, initially they kind of possibly even dehumanize their offenders, and then after meeting them, hearing them their stories, it really sets their mind at ease and really makes them whole again. And I've just seen the way this has changed so many victims in the programs that I've participated in years. It's been incredible to see and see this program working and actually being effective and making these victims whole again.
Yeah, Tyler, I want to get Mary's take on your observation there, but I want to ask you first, how is restorative justice working in Milwaukee County? What do you see?
Obviously, there's limited resources. I've seen it work in both changing the offender and the victim. It's kept a lot of people that, for one reason or another, out of incarceration, which may not have helped them, especially in the juvenile cases. And it's just, unfortunately, I'd like to see a lot more of it, and I know other communities are doing a lot more. Unfortunately, it's just not the funding and the resources that I know of in Milwaukee. But every case that I've facilitated, I've definitely seen huge changes in both the victim and the offender's thinking and actions. And, I mean, I've got countless just absolutely great stories we can't get into now, but how it's affected and helped both parties.
Oh, Tyler, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your perspective. You know, Mary, Tyler is saying that there is often first reluctance on behalf of the victim. Is that common?
Oh, let's see. I would say in 50% of the cases, the victim needs to be convinced. And I use that word. I mean, this is victim focused. And so I will say to them, I've spoken to the offenders. I think that you're going to find it to be helpful. I think that you'll find healing, but the choice is yours. And I've had them, you know, take a while, not so sure, call me back and say, I'll give it a try. I remember one victim, and that's in the book, one victim said, if he kills me, it's your fault. And I, that burden laid heavily on my heart, but the conference went beautifully.
We're talking with Mary Heft and Monica Audette, working on advancing restorative justice programs in Barron County. Have you participated in a restorative justice program through the justice system or the school setting in your area? How has it worked? Have you seen the accused fully understand the harm done and take responsibility? What is it like for victims? 800-642-1234 to share. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing a long-standing commitment in Barron County to restorative justice programs and the results of these interventions over the decades here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Restorative justice creates that space for accountability and healing in the wake of traumatic events. Face-to-face meetings between the person harmed and the person who caused harm, it culminates with a plan that can make things as right as possible for the victim. And in Barron County, its estimates are that more than 10,000 people have experienced restorative conferencing. What do you want to know about Barron County's programs, how they work? Join in, 800-642-1234. Mary Heft is Restorative Conference Facilitator. Monica Audette is Operations Leader for Barron County Restorative Justice Programs, and they're with us for the hour. Let's bring in another call now. Wayne is with us from Green Bay with a perspective. Wayne, hi. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mary and Monica. My name's Wayne, like you said. I used to be a criminal, and I got arrested for theft, and I ended up doing 2 years in prison and 8 years with supervision. And I took classes in an earn release program that ended up falling through because of the stuff in the state. They canceled the program partially through, but while going through the classes, they talked about restorative justice being the community, the victims, and the offenders, and working together. Now, I assumed that somewhere along the line when I got out that actually, like, my probation officer or someone else was going to contact me or do something with me, because I have this, like, I have terrible guilt to what I did, okay? I stole from a little bit from a lot of people, and it was just like, I felt like I was just being, there was no contact at all besides saying, you know, asking you three questions, you know, do you have police contact and have you been drinking or anything like that? And you just tell them no, 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 and you're done. And you don't, I never did anything wrong. I really didn't after I came home from prison.
But there was no soul searching in the questions that they asked you, Wayne. And I want Monica to jump in here. What support do offenders get, and what can help offenders?
Well, in the restorative justice process, we always meet with each party separately. And at that point, we really can work with the offender to say, you know, what was happening in your life? How can we understand what happened? We really want to see if they have taken accountability for their actions and want to know how they would also feel would be the best way that they could repay, you know, make reparation for what they did. And I think a big part of that often is being able to say directly to someone, I'm sorry for what I did to you. And we don't always get that chance, you know, in the regular court system. People are often kept away from each other and are asked not to talk to each other. Even if they desire it, they're asked not to talk to each other. So this is that opportunity where someone can make reparation, direct reparation to a victim through restorative conferencing.
Mary,
can I just say to Wayne?
Tell Wayne?
Well, this is exactly why we wrote the book, why Monica and I wrote the book, because we want every city, every county to have a program so that you could go to that restorative program and say, I have this guilt that I'm carrying with me. I would like an opportunity to speak to my victims. Can you make that happen? That's our hope, that every county throughout the country, that's pretty optimistic with one little book, but it's a start. We want counties to realize these are low cost. Our whole program, and we're just talking about restorative conferencing right now, we have 10 programs that hopefully we'll have time to get to a few of the other major programs, but these programs, the entire program costs $300,000 a year. To incarcerate one person for a year, it's $148,000.
The return there is huge. We're talking with Mary Heft, who has served as a restorative conference facilitator for Barron County Restorative Justice Programs since their inception in 1999. Monica Adet here, operations leader of that restorative justice program. And we're looking at the impact of these programs over the decades in Barron County. With your questions and insights, 800-642-1234. Paige is joining us from Fredonia. Hi, Paige. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say thank you so much to these women who are part of such an amazing program. The story I'd like to share and comment is that I would love to see this kind of program extended to crimes where the perpetrator is also the victim. In our personal family case, our son was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at age 17, and a number of years later had become addicted to drugs, which is the case for nearly 60 to 70% of those with bipolar disorder. And he was very ashamed of his addiction. He was seeking treatment on a continual basis, but had a swing in his bipolar disorder and did accidentally overdose on drugs. That overdose was intercepted by medical personnel, thankfully, but he received a felony. This was his first offense of any sort. He had purchased the drugs on the internet. No one knew he had the drugs. He took the drugs on his own. And he was given a felony with 3 years probation. The judge's comment was that the victim was the police department who had to respond to his overdose. I feel like that pressure and weight. He was already very ashamed of the illness he was fighting, the addiction that he was fighting, and then to be carrying a felony for a young man who was an honor Eagle Scout, who was upstanding in his church and his community, going to school and working. I think the weight of it was too much for him. And in the end, he did die from an overdose. And I just wonder if this kind of program could be used to support the offender / victim and actually healing versus penalizing. There are so many, especially young adults out there, who are dealing with these same kind of issues. And it's such an incredible program that you're supporting.
Monica Euphorst. Yeah, Paige. And I want to make sure that both Monica and Mary can respond. Monica, go ahead.
Sure. I was going to say, you know, we don't always think about all the ways that restorative justice can apply. And many, many times we see no distinction between offenders and victims. That's why my program actually calls it restorative conferencing and not a victim-offender conferencing. There are so many ways that people are affected, and this would have been, you know, the perfect opportunity for him to be able to express himself and to his family, who are also victims of what happened to him, and maybe police departments who also don't always have a voice in saying, you know, this is how my work affects me. So it overall could have been a different process if you had been offered restorative justice.
Mary?
Well, I'm so sorry, Paige. I am so sorry that where you live there weren't other options. There weren't restorative options for your son. I'm so very sorry. In our county, I think that might have been referred. I think the DA's office would have referred it to diversion court. And Monica Boyle, a wonderful, innovative judge. We work. It's her program, but she works with us. She would. It's a wonderful program. There are so many options your son could have had if you were in a restorative community, and I'm deeply sorry, Paige.
Mary Heft and Monica Audette, they are with Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. Barron County residents, what role do you think restorative justice has played in making your community safer, more empathetic? Have you committed a crime? Do you wish you had an avenue to apologize to or talk with the victims? Be part of this conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up on Restorative Justice at Work in Northwestern Wisconsin right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the effects of restorative justice programs at work for decades in Barron County, rural northwestern Wisconsin here. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In 1999, a circuit court judge was searching for an alternative to incarcerating nonviolent offenders, a way to empower victims and hold offenders accountable for their actions. Today, Barron County is home to 10 restorative justice programs, including its first one called Restorative Conferencing. What questions do you have about victim impact panels, about school community outreach or cognitive behavioral intervention? What do you want to know how Barron County is working with teens and youth on restorative justice? Be part of this, 800-642-1234. Monica Audette is Program Operations Leader for Barron County Restorative Justice Programs, and Mary Heft is a Restorative Conference Facilitator, and they stay with us. I want to ask you, back up a little bit, how do perpetrators become involved in the program? How are they selected, Monica?
Well, I would say there are two things that we really need to see in an offender before they are accepted into our program. They need to be able to be accountable for their behaviors, and they also have to have the ability to be empathetic. And then on the other side of it, how do they get referred to us? We have usually more than 30 different agencies that make referrals to us, whether it's social services, the court system, direct referrals from the police departments, either municipal or the sheriff's department, different counseling agencies that will refer to us, lawyers who will refer to us. So there's a lot of different ways that people come to us. And I do believe because we've had the program for so many years that people are aware of it and understand, you know, the need for what we do.
Are you able to handle the caseload and the number of referrals to you?
We are. We have a staff of 5, and which is kind of unusual. Many restorative justice programs are led by 1 or 2 people. But we've been fortunate enough to have a good-sized staff and funding that has been pretty stable, and that's made a big difference in our ability to serve the county.
Where have your funding sources come from in order to keep this going?
Well, our biggest funding source by far is Goodwill of North Central Wisconsin, and Goodwill of North Central Wisconsin covers a 35-county area. They also support 2 other restorative justice programs, Eau Claire Restorative Justice and Marathon County Restorative Justice, besides Barron County Restorative Justice. And we also have other funding. We receive some funding from our county. We receive some funding from our school districts. We receive donations and grants, and then also we have some small program fees for our programming. And with all that all together, Mary had alluded to, we have a budget of just under $300,000 a year. And as Mary said, you know, even if we keep 2 people from incarceration, our program has
paid,
you know,
for itself.
Paid for itself in 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Mary, what are the kinds of crimes that you've seen as you facilitate these conversations and are made available to the restorative justice program? Are there particular crimes that are more common that you work in?
Well, for me, my preference was to work with juveniles. So
okay.
Most of the cases that I've done are with juveniles, and juveniles who've stolen often, like whether it's a car, a snowmobile, stolen money from someone that they did the shoveling at their home and they went inside and stole money. But they're nonviolent offenses. That's what we deal with as nonviolent. And yeah, that's, so mainly for me, it's juvenile offenders. And Kate, I know you're going to get to this, but I think for listeners who are saying, is this just a feel-good program? Is this just a way to avoid real accountability? Approximately 70 to 75% of those who go through the regular court process reoffend again. Those who go through our program, approximately 20% reoffend. So a program that's making our community so much safer, so much safer. And if people want to look at it that way, saving the state so much money for incarceration.
Mary, what does completion look like? A completion of a restorative justice program, what is that like?
So I, as a facilitator, listen to the victim, and I find out what the victim wants from the offender. Oftentimes, like I'll think of one case. She wanted repayment for what the insurance company had paid out, and that was $8,000. She wanted community service. She had a friend who was in desperate need of help. And so three young offenders, one did 150 hours of community service. The other two who helped him with the crime did 75 hours of community service. And then Monica's office oversees, I dropped the contract. The victim and offender agree to that contract. Monica oversees it. So when all of the money was paid back and when all of the community service was done, the program was complete.
I see.
And if they don't complete it, Kate, if they don't complete it, then it goes right back to whoever referred it. If it's the police that referred it, then they'll send it on through the courts. And in this case of the stolen vehicle, three young men would have had felonies.
So it's a significant timeline here as well in order to complete that plan, in order to complete that contract.
Monica, do you want to answer that?
Yeah.
Sure. It really depends on the case. You know, there are some that are resolved fairly quickly, maybe within a month, and some that I have, you know, I have a gal that I've been working with for 2.5 years. So it depends on the crime. It depends on the agreement. There's no time limit on someone working with us.
Monica, how has the pandemic affected your ability to do this work?
It was difficult at first, especially meeting with people face to face. We did some video conferencing, but it's not quite the same. We follow COVID guidelines, the CDC guidelines, and staying, you know, 6 feet apart, being masked, and most of the time we're able to meet with people in person.
We're talking with Monica Audette and Mary Heft. They work on the Barron County Restorative Justice Programs as conference facilitator and operations leader. Monica, operations leader, Mary on the restorative conference side. The two of them wrote about their experiences in a book last year they called From a Single Pebble. You can join in with your experience on restorative justice programs, 800-642-1234. Questions on how to replicate it where you are. John is with us from Richland Center. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I think that your program could use a lot more taxpayer money for funding, because if you take away like $33 million is our sheriff's department here in Richland County, if you gave $10 million over to your restorative justice, because I'm a carpenter, I need young men that are healthy to work for me. They need to get back on their feet.
Yeah, so John is saying, too, that obviously more funding would help, but also more opportunities to give people who have offended an avenue to pay back.
Absolutely. And John, thank you. Thank you for that kind of support. It is a wonderful program, a program that since we've begun just the restorative conferencing, 10,000 people in our community have gone through that program. 10,000. So it's hard to see someone in our community who hasn't been very greatly impacted by it.
Mary, what is your role as a facilitator in these meetings? When do you talk? When do you hold back?
As Monica would say, we have a standard list of questions. So, and the victim is in control. He or she can decide, do you want the offender to begin? Do you want to begin? And we ask, what were you thinking at the time of the crime? How did that crime impact you? How are you feeling about that crime now? How have you been impacted by that crime? So it's a listening process, and so I try to stay out of it. I facilitate listening between the two of them. I'll say things like, please look into the victim's eyes. Please don't read something. We do always preparation in advance. Mm-hmm. So we meet with the victim and the offender. If the offender doesn't have something to say to the victim that's restorative, that shows that he or she is empathetic, then we don't do the program.
Monica, how does this ensure safety for the victims and avoid re-traumatizing them?
Well, that's absolutely one of our goals, is to make sure that it's safe for the victim, because we want to make sure the victim is not re-victimized by going through a process or meeting with someone who doesn't want to take accountability for their actions. So that's part of us vetting it out through pre-conferencing, what we call that, and preparing the dialogue to go forward. There are times when we suggest that the dialogue does not happen and we go another route. Sometimes we'll ease our way into a conversation with an exchange of letters before people actually meet, or a short telephone conversation so that people can further prepare to meet in person. So as I alluded to before, some crimes take longer for people to be prepared for, especially in the case of, we've done several vehicular homicide cases. Those often take many months for people to prepare and heal and become, be in a right place to take that dialogue forward.
Monica Audette, Mary Heft there with Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. Do you work in the justice system? Do you think there needs to be other avenues to justice? Have you seen restorative justice work with youth offenders in particular? Have you found healing and hope through a restorative justice program? Still time for your story, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about restorative justice programs at work for decades in Barron County. Restorative justice, it allows the victim to communicate with the person responsible, usually in face-to-face meetings. Mary Heft and Monica Audette have been doing this work for years as part of Barron County Restorative Justice Programs, and they're sharing their work with us for about 10 more minutes. Jimmy is joining us from Burlington. Hi, Jimmy. I understand you've gone through a restorative justice program.
That's correct.
What was that like for you?
Well, for me, it was, you don't think nothing can really change you or get you to think. You just kind of believe that's just the way it should be sometimes. And it really changed me, man. It touched me. It broke me down, and it gave me something to think about for the rest of my life. And I've been free. It's been a lot of situations that I have just, like, automatically recalled and restored of justice.
And Jimmy, you're breaking up for us, but I want Mary to respond to that piece that we did hear. This has given Jimmy something to think about for the rest of his life.
Jimmy, thank you so much for calling in. It's so important to get that kind of feedback. I teach at the university, and one semester I always begin the class with, tell us something about yourself. And one young man, I didn't recognize him, he got up and he pointed at me and he said, if it weren't for this woman, I'd be in prison right now. Instead, I'm at the university. And he had gone through one of our many processes, and wow, it's such an impact on life. So thank you, Jimmy. I'm so glad that it changed you.
Dan is with us from Lone Rock. Dan, hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to call and say I first learned about restorative justice when I was in prison, and it wasn't an option for me, and I just wish it had been available for me. It took me years to overcome that trauma that I experienced while in prison. I was in much worse shape when I got out than when I went in, and all kinds of abuse. And I think that programs like this, can offer real opportunities for offenders to change and heal, and also for victims to have some real repair happen. And I would look for something like this to replace the entire prison system.
Dan, may I ask, how are you doing today?
Well, I have a family that I love, and it's really a lot better. But I can't tell you how much I believe that that prisons do really nothing but harm for our society, and something like this could really do some healing.
Dan, thank you for sharing your story. Monica, Dan found eventually a support system around him, but how does restorative justice create that support system?
I think it really gives a person direction. We had a person who killed someone driving drunk and went through our program, had the family members had decided that they wanted to speak to him, and it was actually the family that wanted to reach out to the offender. And the young man agreed to it. I don't know that he was, real excited about it at first, but agreed to it. And we were able to do it in the second year of his imprisonment. And it really changed the focus of the rest of his years. And he was able to, he was offered forgiveness by the family, and he was able to change his mind about, poor me kind of a thought, and really understand and have that empathy for the family. And he's kind of dedicated his life to making up for the death that he caused. That's his new focus, and that keeps him going every day.
I want to look at restorative justice through the lens of the killing of George Floyd, through the lens of the Black Lives Matter movement. And how does restorative justice begin to adopt a racial or social justice stance? And Mary, you first.
I think that police officers, my daughter was a police officer for 18 years. She's now working with restorative justice, but so often officers feel that their hands are tied. Someone's committed a crime, they have to arrest them or they have to send them through the court process. This gives officers another option. This gives officers a chance to say, I don't think this is his first time offense. I don't think he should be in prison. It gives them a chance.
What about the implications here, the potential pitfalls of white privilege and the fact that there are unequal power structures in our country that are always present? How do you acknowledge that history of oppression in the restorative justice theory? And Monica, go ahead first.
That's definitely what I think is going on in the country right now, is a way to look at how restorative justice can play a role in that, because the philosophy of restorative justice says we're looking for the dignity and the humanity of people. So how are we all the same? And I think that is one of the pieces of restorative justice that makes it work, is we look for commonalities instead of things that separate us. That changes mindsets right there. So I have much hope for restorative justice in helping heal racial injustice.
Yeah, Mary, what about those unequal power structures? Do you think about that as you lead, facilitate these conversations?
Unequal power structure between victim and offender?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't see it. I see the victim as oftentimes angry, frightened, but I don't see it as a position of power.
Yeah.
I see it as a chance to voice how the crime impacted them, and the offender gets the same opportunity. And then I see empowerment for the offender who's able to say, and the offender always gets to choose, I will do that, I will do what you ask, or no, I won't, and then it ends, and they go through the system. So it's empowerment for both victim and offender.
Monica, where should a community start if they want to create their own restorative justice program like you've done? How can they start replicating your work?
I think the way that we were able to do it, we had a person of influence who really said, this is what I want to go for. And then we had the grassroots folks as well in the community said, yes, that's what we want in our community. So it took those two levels of people, those grassroots people looking for change and a person of influence at the top saying, let's do this together, that really made it work in our community. We had a circuit court judge, Ed Bruner, who's now retired, that really spearheaded it, and then he got everyone in the community together, from teachers and business owners and, you know, our school superintendents and everyone to say, yeah, let's look at change, something we can do together. And that's how it worked in our community.
It sounds like there has to be a really strong buy-in from the judges in the community.
And yes, definitely when we started, because, you know, at that point it was let's be tough on crime was really the thought at that time when we started. So it took a driving force to really make that change. I love a story that Ed Bruner used to tell, the judge. He said one day he had a little boy in his courtroom. He said he was so small that he couldn't hear him in the courtroom, so he asked the little boy to approach the bench. And he approached the bench, and all he could see was his little fingers, you know, hitting the top of the bench, and he couldn't see the little boy. And he said, there has to be another way to work. Mm-hmm. You know, what's a six-year-old doing in my courtroom? So that was where he had the desire to look for something different.
What a powerful story. Mary, we only have a few seconds left. What is the future of restorative justice programs in your community?
Well, the future for us is good, but why we wrote the book, Kate, is you asked the question of Monica, how do people set up these programs? Every chapter of our book tells them exactly how to set up a program, exactly how we did it in Bering County, how they can do it, and how they can do it with, there's a chapter on where we get grants from. It's laid out so that if you want this for your community, you can get it.
Mary and Monica, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you so much.
Mary Heft has served as a restorative conference facilitator for Bering County since the program's inception in 1999. Monica Audette is operations leader. The two of them wrote about their experiences in a book called From a Single Pebble. You can find a link at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.